something that someone might be confounded with would be the incredible extent of, say, talking past one another that we encounter in our personal lives, in any public sphere. How is it that so many people can hold seemingly diametrically opposite views and all be convinced that they're right and never concede any ground for the most part? How is it that it is so difficult to win an argument when I, whoever it is that I am, know that I'm right and obviously you're wrong? How? What gives? Is nobody right? Is everybody right? What's going on? So one broad way to approach the topic could be to ask, what is the nature of truth and how do we represent it to ourselves? Here, a good point to begin with would be to recall that language in itself is neither true nor false. It is supposed to stand for a content such as is other than itself. So, for example, if I want to get paid, right, on payday, and all that happens is that somebody gives me the word paid or tells me you're paid, but I don't have the money in the bank account, I'm not going to be satisfied, right? That's because I can't get paid with words. I need real money. If I order some food at the restaurant and the waiter or waitress comes up and says, here's your salad. Where is it? Salad. I don't see it. Salad. I'm giving it to you. No. All right, burger. You're not, because that's a word that's supposed to stand for something substantive, which is not itself a word. I do not eat the word salad. I eat something such as is called salad. And just so for the burger, the steak, and anything else. Right, so we have to recall that, because when we don't recall that, we may suppose that words in and of their own self have meaning, right? And if I say something, I'm saying something by necessity, but that is not a guarantee. I'm making words, I'm making noise, but that noise stands for anything actual is a question. So for example, I can say round square, and it would seem that I've said something sensible. And yet if I think about it, what can be meant by the terms round square? I can draw a square and then I can try to round it, but I see that as I try to round it, it loses its squarehood. If we define a square as four straight lines connected with each other at 90 degree angles, if I begin to again curve any of the sides, any of the angles, it's no longer a square. Now I could call what then results a round square. I could rename things, but by the definition of a square, again, as having those 90 degree angles and those four lines, anytime I begin to try to impose roundness on it, that quality is lost. It displaces it. Therefore, the phrase round square, being that it suggests that that displacement does not occur, it suggests that there can be something such as is simultaneously, such as simultaneously possesses the properties of squarehood and circlehood. That is an erroneous statement. It stands for, we can say for nothing, but then what is that nothing? So we can just say it's just gibberish. It's equivalent to blah, 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 right? It's equivalent to just noise. So we have to ask ourselves again, what is the noise that is coming out of my mouth or the figures that I'm typing or writing or otherwise conveying? What does it stand for? Now, when we consider what something stands for, we see that there can be a tremendous latitude as it concerns our concepts, as it concerns the way that we try to account for what is given. But ultimately, it seems we do bump up into what is given. We have to start with some sort of content, which is itself, which is what it is. So for instance, obvious examples in the perceptual department, I can come up with all sorts of theories concerning color, and I can correlate it with different kinds of modifications of the optical apparatus in different scientific terms, but ultimately something such as is called red is simply given to those lucky enough to have color vision, right? And something such as is called yellow, likewise, green, and so forth. These are qualities that are given to me. Now, if I pay attention to them and I think and talk about them a lot, perhaps I can and discern various shades that before I did not discern, but I have to bump up into something which is simply itself. a little bit more kind of complicated, perhaps, although perhaps not, aspects of our psychology. I bump up into the hard fact of what it means to be a person, what it means, for example, to want something or to feel pain or to feel pleasure and such. I can account for it in many different ways, but I have to eventually deal with something actual, right? Maybe my sentience, for example, and such. It's not something that I can simply conjure up out of a hat by using many different sorts of terms. So with those brief comments in mind, we can next consider the point that taking the givens of life, meaning what is given, what is not simply linguistic, what is not simply chitter-chatter, there are presumably innumerable ways to represent it to ourselves and to account for it and to come up with different sorts of systems that allegedly account for at least some of our experiences. So, for instance, taking human nature, right, as it's called, taking the common condition of each individual, we can make observations concerning human nature. And if they're veridical, if they're actual and accurate, they're not contrived entirely, right? They're not simply I'm making something up. Let's say that I want to believe that every person in the world is a beautiful flying fairy that is flying around and, giving people the money, like a tooth fairy or something. Who knows? I just say something, just a bunch of words, right? Empty chitter chatter. I have to observe people. I have to observe myself, and I have to encounter content such, again, as is not verbal, such as is, and that's it. Now, having encountered that content, having thought about it, I can then seek to account for it in any quantity of ways. Right? I can say that the reason that people are as they are, with our typical qualities, for example, of self-centeredness and selfishness, and what human development looks like, this and that, I can invoke what can be called mythology. I can invoke stories. I can invoke different hypotheses and theories and systems. So many different ways of accounting for what is given to me. What is so? I am now not an endless amount of ways, perhaps, but all of those ways, in order for them to be not simply chitter chatter, they do have to have some degree of internal consistency, and they have to properly account for at least some experiences. Right, physical law would be a good example. We're given in our experience certain facts concerning the empirical. For example, the way that objects fall, the way that objects move, the way that projectiles move, the way that the planets move, and so forth. And the trick is coming up with some sort of mathematical representation from which proper inferences, deductions can be made, which can account for further experiences and can help us do scientific things. And that has been a task that has been engaged in by great physical or minds in the physical sciences, such as Newton, for example. And I have these appearances, I have these things that I just have to contend with, again, the way things fall and the movement of the objects in the sky. How do I create a system? What rules and laws, so-called laws, do I need to reference in order to account for all of this, in order to be able to make accurate predictions, for example, concerning eclipses, concerning the return of comets, for example, the launching of projectiles, where they're going to land, and all of that. But we say that far from only one such system being possible, it would seem to be the same thing. There's perhaps an innumerable amount of such systems that are possible, just as there's an innumerable amount, perhaps, of internally consistent mathematical systems, unlike the single one, which for a long time it was thought that only something called Euclidean space was the sole possibility. But in fact, it seems there's many different ways to account for space mathematically that are all internally consistent and could conceivably work. Taking the givens concerning the solar system, there's so many ways, so many different orbital paths to account for what we experience in the sky, right? Since ancient times, many have believed, say the Ptolemaic system, which would reverse the motions of the sun and the earth and this and that, those can all be internally consistent systems. It's not so simple to say this is right and this is wrong and this is how we're going to prove it and that's it. If we can make accurate predictions from a system, it can be valid for what it's worth. Right? And there are other criteria that could come into question, such as simplicity and ease of use and all of that. And that would be one reason why this Copernican system upended the previous one, perhaps, and all that. But anyhow, we see that the same idea seems to hold all across the board for our philosophical views, for our social views, for views concerning, again, human psychology, human nature, and all of that. That would be one way to understand how there can be so many apparently conflicting conceptions of the world, and how we talk past each other to the extent that we do. Forgetting that the words that I use, in order for them to not be empty chitter-chatter, have to stand for real content. I may simply get attached to the terms that I use, to the initial axioms that I assume concerning my world conceptions. Having so done, seeing that any such system with enough cleverness can be made to appear internally consistent, right? I can, if I'm clever enough, right? Let's say that I assume the axiom that this post-it note that I have, everything on it is true, period. There's no way that it's not true. Now it tells me that 2 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 2 is 4, 2 plus 2 is 5. If I'm clever enough, I'll figure out a way to square all of that away. I might say that, for example, in each case, the numeral 2 stands for something else. I might cite objects that it could apply to. For example, a water drop would make one water drop if combined, and I can maybe figure that out for 2 and 2, whatever it might be. If I'm absolutely committed to the axiom that everything on here is true, I'll make it work, or I'll ignore something, or whatever it might be. So that's it. Again, forgetting that the terms that you stand for something, having fidelity to those terms, to those underlying axioms, there's nothing in the world anybody could say that could sway me. There's nothing that can persuade me. I can always maneuver around. I can always figure out how to remain in my context, right? Which can be fine. And so far as my context is sufficiently solid in the sense of accounting for at least some of our experiences. Again, I've to go back to the example concerning physical law, I have I'm a committed adherent to the earlier hypotheses concerning the motions of the planets. As long as I'm committed to that, I'll find a way to account for any and all apparent contradictions and so forth. But that can be fine as long as I can make accurate predictions from my system, and I can launch the spaceship, I can launch the satellite. That's fine, right? It works. So just so a sufficiently sound world conception can give me guidance as to what is actual, right? As to my own nature and how to develop it and how to relate to other people and how to not self-destruct and all of that. And again, there's an innumerable amount of such conceivably sufficiently sound conceptions. And they appear to contradict each other on a verbal level, right? But again, as long as they're sufficiently internally consistent and from them can be yielded sufficiently sound predictions as to the future, and this will happen, if that will happen, and again, how to deal with the facts of life, it's fine. So the key then would not be, as it concerns talking past one another, the most important thing would not be to strive to upend one conception in favor of another conception of the same, say, epistemic value and worth. Meaning, let's say that I account for the facts of life with some theory that I just randomly thought up, right? And yet, it kind of works for me. I use different terms. I think the human nature can be accounted for by the whatever it might be. Who knows? It kind of works for me. It's decent. Right? Somebody else also thought up such a conception, and somebody else as well. Now, the goal would not be to take another conception that is similar in soundness and value and worth to mine and just swap things up. That's not making any progress, right? And you believe something of say, X maturity level, and so do I. And now I've simply swapped it, right? Now you've convinced me. Now I believe also what you were saying. Right? I've switched up the words that I use, but it's the same type of thing. So that wouldn't be the goal. It doesn't matter. You say X, I say Y, if it works to some extent, okay. The goal would be to mature and transcend our present such conceptions and to make them sounder and to make them more sophisticated and to make them more fit to account for life and its experiences. And in so doing, approximate the truth represented to myself and my mind more and more without ever getting there, but moving, hopefully trending in the right direction. And one of the benefits of which would be the mental health and the happiness and the goodness that I'm after. So what's a specific example? Let's say that as a little kid, a fact that I have to account for is the fact that once a year there are presents that magically appear in the living room of my home. I have to contend with that fact. It's so. I can touch the presents. I can see them. I can play with the toys. I can't deny that they're there. But how do I account for it? Right now, I'm told that it's because of Santa Claus, right? There's a man, and he flies on reindeer, and he comes down the chimney, and he eats the cookies, maybe, that I leave for him, and then he leaves the presents there. That's my present theory, accounting for this undisputable fact that here are my gifts. Now, let's say, as an example of what is worthless, which is not necessary, let's say that my buddy across the street has a different theory. It's not Santa Claus. It's, in fact, a man named Samantha Smaz, right? Let's say my buddy convinces me that it's Samantha Smaz, whatever we said. Did I gain anything? No, I haven't advanced at all as it concerns that my theory of how this happens, how I get the gifts. It's just I've switched the names. Let's say that my buddy convinces me that it's not a man on reindeer. It is, in fact, some kid on a flying broomstick, and that's how the gifts get there. Also, it's of the same, we can call epistemic worth, meaning as it concerns knowledge and its pursuit and such. I didn't gain anything by swapping up the one conception for the other. See, I'm a convert. Now I believe your theory about the boy on the broomstick as it concerns accounting for these gifts. Now, and we can think up again a million endless such hypotheses. In fact, it's a squirrel that, a talking squirrel that, vaporizes in the living room and brings the gifts. No, it's not a squirrel. It's actually a deer. It's actually a magician. It's actually, right? We can keep going like that. All of these things are on the same level. They account for the indisputable fact of the gifts in essentially the same way. Now, what would be the way to progress that would be useful? Eventually, not let it be for a while. Some parents, out of spite, stop blaming or stop giving the credit to Santa. They'll spill the beans too early. In fact, it's me that gives you the gifts. No need for that. But eventually, the better theory would be, it's my parents. They give the gifts, for example, my guardians, whatever the case might be. But I can keep moving in the direction of truth. I can eventually ask the question, how are the gifts produced, where are they produced, and who produces them? There's an innumerable amount of relations concerning any given real thing. How do I define this particular gift that I have here? How does it differ from the one across the street? Well, it is 1 foot from 5 feet from this wall, and it's 10 feet from the street, and it's 15 feet from that tree, and 20 feet from the other tree, and it's somewhere in relation to every single other object in the universe. And somebody made it. And who made it? And who are their parents? And who are their parents? And where did their parents live? And who built the house that their parents lived in? And so forth and so on. So we see that to define any one object completely, it would seem that we would need to cite every single applicable relation concerning that object. And that would presumably, it seems, or some have argued, it would encompass the whole universe, at least past and present, right? Every single person that has been and everything that has ever been done is somehow related to every single little thing that there is and every single little thing that occurs. So we see we can move in that direction. We can never get to the destination of that direction. It's impossible. There's either trillions and quintillions and quintillions of such facts or an infinite amount of such facts, depending on how we think about it. But we can certainly never get to that destination and fully define and fully explain what the gifts are and how they got there and so forth. But the starting point would be something that is sufficiently true, such as my parents brought the gifts, right? That Santa brought it, and that the Schmanta brought it, and that the squirrel brought it, and that the boy on the broomstick brought it. Those are all insufficient to account in reality for this fact. Right? They're sufficient to give me some sort of explanatory framework. They weren't there, and now they're there, and I'm citing some sort of cause that I'm imagining. So it works in that way. But if I investigate a little bit, right, and I mature a little bit, I'm not going to be able to hold that conception. I'm going to assume the first the most elementary, sufficiently reasonable explanation, which would be that the parent, the guardian, whoever it is, brought me those gifts, right? And we can go from there, as was mentioned, to infinity. Not that we should in this case, obviously, but just to say. So just so, perhaps with aspects of life, I can start off with a conception of things that is sufficiently so, right? Such as an account, such as an honest and sincere individual could hold, not necessarily would hold, because again, there's still multiple different accounts to hold, but what would be able to hold. And from there, if I keep thinking and I keep progressing and I keep developing, I keep maturing, I keep becoming more true and more honest and more sincere, the sophistication and capacity to contain the facts or account for the facts of life, of my world conception, should go up. And it can go up endlessly. Right? There's no single point. All right, now here my world conception is, that's it. It's a wrap. It perfectly accounts for anything. As was mentioned, even to define a single little object, we can, again, cite either quintillions of relations or an infinite amount of relations, whatever the case would be, never mind to truly understand any, say, philosophical or substantive, other substantive reality concerning life, concerning oneself, and so forth. So, in summary, the question was asked, how can it be that there's so many conceptions of life and everybody seems to believe firmly what they do believe and everybody talks past each other? I want you to say what I'm saying and you want me to say what you're saying. First thing could be to remember that words in themselves are senseless. They have to indicate content such as is other than themselves. I cannot get paid with the word paid. I cannot eat a word for food. I need the actual stuff. Concerning that actual stuff, there's an endless amount of ways to account for it, an endless amount of conceptions that can have some soundness, that can help me to predict what's going to happen and help me to understand things and help me to link up the different facts of experience. A way to think about all of these conceptions would be their degree of maturity and their degree of sophistication as opposed to necessarily their rightness or wrongness. The explanation that Santa brought the gifts is so in the sense that it invokes causation. Somebody has to bring the gifts, right? So it's elementary. For an elementary explanation, it's fine. If I replace that with another equally elementary explanation, such as that Schmanta brought the gifts, or that the boy on the broomstick brought the gifts, I will not have gained anything. I will not have matured. I will be the same young person, which is, again, perfectly fine. But just as an example, I need to gain a sounder explanation that is more mature, that has more value and more possibility to explain what happened, such as my parent or guardian brought the gifts. But that's just the first step, because from there I can travel endlessly toward truth, toward a further and further elaboration of what is in question and what is the reality, and I can represent it to my mind more and more so. And the means to doing that would be to have the character that would permit so doing. Right? I have to be true to myself. I have to be honest. I have to face myself. I have to face the aspects of my psychology that would skew my perception and my aperception, the way that I see things as a whole and such. And if I keep doing that, then hopefully I will be able to move endlessly in the direction of truth. But that would not involve taking, again, some or another elementary account of things and trying to push it onto somebody else, or having somebody else's such account be pushed onto me. There, I stay stagnant. Again, I agree that the boy on the broom brought it, not Santa. I haven't matured. I have to have a more veridical, meaning actual, account of something. It has to be more mature. Right? That would be a way to think of it. And from there, we can keep on going. Thank you for listening.